they are taught, and then we'll follow one another, and then from there we'll allow the discussion by members. Unfortunately, we have to start without the two members. We said we are journeying until 6:30. My watch is say half past six now. We have to start. Minister, you can then introduce your three entities, and then.
So we did the introduction earlier on. The members proceed to so that it has been a long day for members. So Shura Chair is here with the members of the committee.
Thank you, Minister. Maybe good evening, Chair. And I'd like to say all protocols are served. Chair, we appreciate the opportunity to present to you the APP for SRA 2023-2024. It's not the first time we as this current council chair are coming to present to you, but I think we're coming now from a different position that we are able to say we have been here for at least one full calendar year and one full financial year. And I think previously we were in trouble as the entity, as one of the calls from Minister when we came in was to stabilize the entities. And I think at that point we had taken so long to appoint our CEO, which today I present to you, Mr. Sandile Luthuli, as the CEO of the entity. And also to maybe confirm, Chair, that the position of the acting CSM, which is a corporate services manager, which is equal to a CFO in other entities, is going to be filled quite soon as well. The APP Chair is largely informed by engagements that have happened from the ground level up to the highest level, being that it has gone through the staff and the executive, council, the shareholder, external stakeholders, and yourself, Chair, with the feedback that we've received in some of the engagements that we have had with you. I'm not going to take up a lot of time, Chair. I'm going to hand over quickly to the CEO to take us through. He will take us through the strategic and administrative level of the APP, which then afterwards the acting corporate services manager will take us through the finances, which is the budget. Thank you, Chair. CEO.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson of the committee, and good evening to all the members. We are here to present the SRAS APP for the year 2023-24. Our presentation covers is very vast, but we will take it as read and highlight maybe some key issues. As the chairperson has indicated, from a governance perspective, the SRA Council is fully capacitated with the depth and breadth of experience to guide the management of the SRA. We have five subcommittees of the Council to which the executive management team then reports on a regular basis. We are at advanced stage of filling some key vacancies in the executive management position with the pending appointment of the corporate services manager, the chief risk officer, as well as a company secretary. I think with that, we will be able to then be in a position to deliver fully on our objectives. The APP seeks to build on some of the successes that we've had in the past. And here we are trying to demonstrate the number of units that we have been able to complete at least in the last four financial years. The trajectory, as members can see, from completing 1,856 units to 3,182 that we've been able to complete in the year just ended March 2023. From a tenanting point of view, in aggregate, we are able to achieve 89% just because of the lag time between completing a unit and actually tenanting it. One of the objectives is obviously to narrow the gap between the tenanting and the number of units completed to as narrow a margin as we possibly can. But looking forward now into the medium-term strategic framework, where we currently, or where we ended the last financial year, is that we had achieved 60% of the MTSF target. Our ability to fully complete the APP target for 2023-24 takes us to 78%. We are looking at a possible acquisition strategy that will enable us to actually get to the MTSF target of 81% by the end of the 2023-24 financial year. Jefferson. In this slide, what we try to demonstrate is the relationship between the level of approvals and completions. Since 2014-2015, the SHRA has approved a total of just under 42,000 units, out of which 24,000 have actually been completed. Through active contract management in this intervening period, we've had to cancel quite a number of contracts, totaling about 11,354 units due to a non-performance by our delivery agents. This gives us an average completion of 2,754 units on a per annum basis. The portfolio in and of itself, what it demonstrates is that largely the growth has been experienced in your CCG funded type projects. This is mainly as a result of the consolidation of institutional subsidy and what was then the RCG. So this line has basically remained flat over time. These unsubsidized units that the SHRA inherited when it was created have also remained flat over time. Chairperson, in total what we are demonstrating here is that the SHRA is building on a total portfolio of 44,114 units that we are currently regulating as an entity. So from the MTSF and our strategic plan is informed by various policies and strategies, and it seeks to make a contribution towards those. In terms of the MTSF priority number 5, dealing with spatial integration, human settlements, and local government, we look to that as part of the key strategies that inform us. The ERRT, as announced by the President of the Republic, the Social Housing Growth Plan. But from a policy perspective as well, the indexation of the grant quantum and income bands informs what we do, the social housing norms and standards, which have been spoken of earlier on. The National Rental Macro Policy Framework, this was developed in conjunction with the department, as well as the quantum adjustments and additional specifications as announced by the Honorable Minister on the 31st of March 2023. So those are all the elements that actually inform our strategy and our APT. From a deliverables point of view, what underpins or some of the key focus elements of our strategy, it's the need for us to have collaborative relationships with municipalities, provincial structures, our sister entities, as indicated earlier, you know, the establishment of incubation programs to assist a new entrance into the social housing sector. Sorry. But also the need for us to strengthen communication and raise awareness around social housing, you know, the whole rental market and the roles and responsibilities of tenants as and when they arise. Internally, the environment does require that we also look internally to beef up the capacity for us to fulfill our mandate. Critical to this is the objective, and this is in our APP, to achieve an unqualified audit outcome. The need for us to engage further with the department around our organizational structure to build that capacity and capability, improve our turnaround times as the SHRA. The need to strengthen our performance management systems and improve our business processes to make us a more agile organization. Leverage ICT as a strategic enabler, but also deal with issues of fraud and corruption, which are quite endemic in the sector. We have quite a number of stakeholders that we have identified, and these require active management and communication, whether through council, through the executive management, or other members of the organization. That has been adopted by council, and we all know what we need to do at any point in time. I think similar to our colleagues, we have developed a pastel, but maybe I will just leave a couple of issues around the political side. One of the issues that is impacting us quite severely and may impair our ability to deliver with speed is the local government and the speed with which they are able to actually process projects and approve them. The emergence of coalition government and the paralysis that it does bring into the efficiency with which local government actually operates. On the social side, the issues of rental boycott are becoming quite endemic. On the economic side, the low economic growth, as well as inflation, as well as the limited fiscal space to allocate budget to us. Technologically, cybercrime is a key issue. On the environmental side, the issue of climate change, disasters and floods and all of those things ultimately impact on the demand and supply equation, and increase the attractiveness of social housing, and then on the legal side, it's the ability to deal with a delinquent tenants, but making sure that, you know, human rights are observed. But also we are able to protect the asset and protect the stability of the sector itself. Chairperson, the SWOT analysis has been done as well. The issue for us is really to convert what are internal weaknesses and manage through effective risk management the threats that actually in the operating environment. To convert those weaknesses and threats into opportunities and strengths so that the SHRA can grow and become a better performing organization. In total, our APP for 2023-24 has got 25 key indicators that are spread between the various programs in the organization, administration, car sector development, and all of these various programs have got embedded in them transformation objectives that accompany them. In the next few slides, Chairperson, we deal specifically with the key indicators, the issue of the external audit outcomes. We speak about the issues of fraud and fraud prevention, risk management, the rental boycott, the number of units that we actually have to deliver, the tenancy audit, building conditions assessment, and various other measures on a per program basis. So all of these are outlined here. The issue of youth internship. We currently have 11 learners. In the new year, we will be taking on 15 more, and management is currently seized with an absorption strategy for those interns, so that we grow our own team, as it were. So, Chairperson, we also in the ATP identify certain strategic risks.
Your time is the Uma Hot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chairperson, maybe just in completion, this is our MTF budget allocation. You will see that the largest portion of it goes towards the actual delivery of units, and the rest is to support the delivery of units. Given the limitations of time, Chairperson, I will stop there, and we will then recommend that the Portfolio Committee notes the SHRAB annual performance plan. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Chair. Which one? Oh, and if okay.
Maybe once Chairperson is the connecting, so maybe just to take this image yourself, Chair, to the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and one of the members. Also, I can confirm that we finally have a new CEO. I know we had her, now she's here in person. Our new CEO, Ozola. And Chair, we are here to present the ATP for NHFC, and she will go into the detail, not too much, we assume you've seen the plan, but there's just going to be probably a few areas that I will just not feel, but you areas that I to focus on. One of the is the human settlement of Northern Bank, that's going to be part of the focus area for the next one. Transformation is always key for us. We want to crowd in private sector. How do we move on with funds? There's no funding for the sector. Also, we will focus on the audit findings as well from our side. And also, Chairperson, we're excited to also say that we are driving very hard. You know, the first home finance. It is a program that we are busy with. NHFC and we are driving that very hard. And so I think those are the areas that I can speak to. Otherwise, we can then present the ECC.
Thank you very much, Minister. I just didn't see the chair agree. I didn't see the chair agree.
No, I agree.
Oh.
I agree.
This is what happens when the gods are with you, you see. good evening, Chairperson and the honorable members of the committee, Minister, Deputy Minister, DDG, acting colleagues, chairpersons, and CEOs of the entities that are here. My name is Stephen Ngubeni. I am the chairperson of the PPRA, and with me is the acting CEO, Ms. Thato Ramahili. We will be presenting before you today the 2023-2024 annual performance plan. I had a small discussion through you, Minister, with the acting CE, that when we are presenting, we will try and present the APP. We will not talk to the annual report. In other words, we will not deal with the performance, so not to hog your time, but to talk about what is it that we are intending to do. And as much as that is our commitment, I think there is just one thing that I owe to this committee chair. Last time when we appeared before you, we promised you that when we come again, we will report to you about the progress we are making with regards to the recruitment of the executives or filling the executive positions. We have, to that extent, filled in all the vacant positions since last time we came before you, except for the new vacancy that has been created with the saga that has happened between us and the CEO. Which culminated in the termination of the relationship, and we are currently in the process of trying to recruit for the new CEO. However, there is litigation ongoing that is also delaying us in the process. Mm-hmm. But all of the positions we have recruited, some people have already started at the beginning of this month, and the rest are commencing at the beginning of June. So we have made progress in so far as that is concerned. I will take this opportunity, Chair, and hand over to the acting CEO to take us through the APP. Thank you.
Good evening, Chairperson, Minister, Deputy Minister, all portfolio committee members, all protocol officers. I am Thato Ramahili. The presentation is divided into four sections. The first section provides the strategic overview of the entity and the organizational strategic focus, giving effect to the provision of the Property Practitioners Act. Our mandate rests on three pillars, which is to regulate, transform, and protect consumers in the sector. The next session is the SWOT analysis, which is followed by detailed program performance information outlining all 24 targets listed on the APP, which is what I will delve into. And then the last section focuses on the financial performance information, which I'll also touch on. But we'll spend a bit of time on slide 29 and 31, which focus on risk management, as the entity has made significant strides in that regard. Those are our programs. The current reporting for Q4 is sitting at 70.8%, which is a slight improvement from the prior quarters. The displeasing performance was a culmination of ambitious targets and failure to provide supporting documents on stated performance. In implementing the programs, especially in Q4, we facilitated ongoing engagement with constituents to ensure that we strive towards reaching the strategic goals and targets we have set as an organization. We are also on course to ensure that there's compliance in POE submissions, which was not the case previously. We are confident that with the mechanisms put in place, the entity's performance will be in a positive, will be a positive one moving forward. I'll take the members through the APP, highlighting some key and new targets. Under Program 1, which is an administration, we are targeting an unqualified audit opinion with no material findings. And another new indicator was under anti-fraud and corruption report, and they were saying that 100% implementation of this fraud prevention plan. Still under administration, the procurement spent on designated groups, 5% will be spent on businesses owned by persons with disabilities. And this program we have made in this quarter, well, we've started implementing it, even though we are not yet at the 5% mark, but we were intentional as an entity to ensure that we do comply in meeting this target. Another new indicator, important indicator, is around percentage procurement spent on businesses owned by women. 40% was our target, and we have met and exceeded this target in the previous financial year. And we will continue to do so in the new financial year. Another program that is worth mentioning is around the reduced and speedy resolution of consumer queries. 85% of consumer queries will be resolved within 90 days at the PPRA. And then around Program 2, which is around licensing, we're saying that property practitioners registered on the database of the PPRA will be, we're targeting 8,000 compliant property practitioners that will be registered on our database. And we are still talking of the erstwhile estate agents, which we now call property practitioners. This number does not include new subsectors, new entrants into the sector. And then around Program 3, around inspection and enforcement, percentage completed investigations requiring adjudication are adjudicated within 30 days. We are targeting 100% target in this regard, which we are we will meet in this first quarter of the year. Program 4 is around education, professionalization, and CPD, which is continuous professional development. We are saying that the number of property practitioners awarded with professional designations in the year will be 1,500 in the 2023-2024 year. And those that will obtain or meet the CPD requirements in the year are 12,000. And we have held consumer awareness throughout the country in all the 9 provinces where we were ensuring that these practitioners meet this requirement in the fiscal year. The program 6 is around property sector transformation, which is our core mandate. It takes up the chapter 4 in our new legislation. And we are targeting 25 SMMEs owned by historically disadvantaged groups, and we will place those through the incubation program. And the transformation fund, which is another new indicator, 100%, we will implement 100% of the transformation fund strategy. As the chair alluded earlier, we did finally appoint a transformation fund manager at the PPRA, and who is driving this mandate for the entity. I will then skip the next slides and go to the risk management, which we had tabled obviously when the minister was approving this APP, but we had made strides as far as the key risks are concerned at the PPRA. And some of the mitigation plans was to develop a business process to inform IT system requirements, procurement of an ERP system, which is underway. There was a vacuum in the SCM department and the PPRA, but we have since appointed an SCM manager who, together with the BSC, BAC, and BEC committees, are finalizing the specs in this regard so that we can go out finally on bid for the long overdue ERP system. And then the filling of critical vacant positions, the chair's already touched on. Regular performance assessments, we have been performing these on a quarterly basis with executives and then cascading down to the rest of the employees. Enforcement of the consequence management, this is one key element that was absent at the PPRA for a very long time. And in my tenure, I have been intentional about enforcing such. Obviously, it is not well received by the employees, but it is in the best interest of the entity. And then issues around damage to the image or integrity and the reputation of the PPRA. There have been communication awareness programs throughout the country with stakeholders, and then regular training for the call center personnel, as well as internal stakeholders who are practitioners in the sector and subsectors. Also just updating of study guides to ensure that they are aligned with the new Act. That has also been underway. Another one that I think I should touch on is just, you know, lack of understanding of the real estate transaction by consumers, also holding consumer awareness programs. The recent one that we have done as an entity, we have issued communique and media statement around Section 63 of the Act, which talks about undesirable practices in the sector, just so that consumers know that they can work with who they choose to work with, and also just the breaking down of barriers in gated communities in South Africa. There are still estates in the country who are enforcing accreditation fees, which are now illegal as prescribed by the legislation. So we are enforcing and issuing compliance notices for those estates who are contravening this part of the legislation. The next section that I'd like to touch on is around is the financial performance summary. The revenue comprises of FFC renewals, which are Fidelity Fund certificate renewals, which is sitting at 32 million for the year, as well as new examinations of property practitioners, existing ones. Another contributor to the revenue is management fees. This management fee is the fee that the PPRA, Fidelity Fund, pays to the Property Practitioners Fund, which is a 9% fee currently, and then also fines and penalties of 37 million. And then operating costs comprises of administration expenses, staff costs, which are mainly salaries, travel costs, and then also directors' remuneration, which would be board fees. That is the revenue analysis, which we have broken down. I'm happy to take questions from members in relation to that. The capital expenditure also for the year, for the 2022-2023 year, the biggest driver there is the IT infrastructure and the computer equipment, as I had alluded earlier, that we are in the process of finalizing the procurement of the ERP system. And then the last part is around the Property Practitioners Fidelity Fund, which comprises of contributions of 3.2 million the interest component, which is the agent interest. This is the interest that currently the 50% of it accrues to the Fidelity Fund, to the PPRA, and 50% is payable to the property practitioners, and then other interest on investments. The assumptions are tabled below, and because we are cognizant of time, I will stop there and recommend that the Portfolio Committee notes the report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chair, you can close. Chair, what's the PPR? Are you done?
Anyway, that's our recommendation.
Okay, thank you. NHFC.
Second time lucky, Chair. Sorry about that. Okay. I think, Chair, I've already made my opening remarks, and maybe I'll just hand over to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much. Good evening, Chair. Good evening to the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and all the members of the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlements. It's my pleasure to be in the graveyard shift. I'm going to try and not stand between you and going back to the rooms to relax. So I'm going to try to speak very, very fast, and I'm not going to cover all aspects of the presentation. I'm going to take it as read, and with respect to what I'm going to cover, I'll just quickly talk to the external and operating environment that the NHFC operates within, and then I will highlight our key successes that we've managed to attain as an entity to date. And I will also, because as you well know, you know, the NHFC is going to morph into the Human Settlements Development Bank in the not-too-distant future. So I'm just going to touch on the strategic focus of what the would-be HSDB is going to focus on, and then I'll take us through some performance highlights just with respect to the MTSF, you know, which ends in this 2023-2024 financial year, and how we've fared over the years relative to the targets that have been set for us. And then I'm going to take you through the APP for this particular financial year, just to see what we are targeting with respect to all the programs of the department, and then take you through our financial budget. I think I'll skip the SWOT analysis, and as well as our response to the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, as that's already contained in the presentation that was submitted. Just to backdrop my presentation, you know, as the NHFC, and generally, I think planning, when people plan, go on strategic, you know, imbezos to plan, we often ask the question, what can we do? And in our belief as the NHFC, this severely limits what entities actually end up doing, right? And so what we've done is we've changed this question to, what must we do, and how must we change in order for us to do it? In other words, you know, assess what the problem statement is with respect to the human settlements environment, and then respond by then being pliable enough to ensure that you set yourself up, whether it's with respect to the structure of the entity, as well as its funding model, which is relevant to the NHFC, in order to be able to be responsive, because ultimately we were set up as an entity, you know, to be able to respond to what is happening in the ground so that we remain relevant, you know, to the needs of ordinary South Africans.
So this was really, premised by a strategic planning session that happened in June of 2022, which was opened by the minister, and the session was attended as well by our board of directors as well as the management team. And in the end, what we decided the NHFC needs to do, or the future HSDB needs to do, the HSDB needs to raise sufficient enough capital at the right weighted average cost of capital from a diverse pool of funders. In other words, it's a blended finance model that we are going for, in order that we are able to catalyze a market that has the capacity to facilitate 100,000 to 200,000 decent homes per annum over the medium term. So that is really, obviously, that is a big, hairy, audacious goal that the sector, that in effect, we would like to make a contribution towards, because we know that we sit with some 3 million, housing unit backlog with respect to this affordable and gap housing segment that we operate within. So currently, the houses that are built in the sector on an annual basis is 20,000. So that is quite a leap, which necessitates that, we do things differently, we structure ourselves differently in order that we are able to fulfill this. I just want to backdrop, I suppose, the numbers that you are going to see in our APP with what is happening in the environment in which we operate in. So first off, the target market that we're targeting in terms of our product set as the NHFC cuts across really, from people that don't earn anything, in other words, that are eligible for fully subsidized housing. So this is your BNG and RDP housing, all the way to, we also cover the gap market, all the way to the affordable market segment, which is people that earn up to 22,000 Rand per month. Okay? And really, if we consider the people that have to fund their housing needs, right, that have to either rent, and effectively, are beneficiaries of social housing, which is subsidized rentals or private rentals, or people that are able to buy affordable housing stock for ownership, they are affected by the high interest rate environment that is currently prevalent in South Africa. And what that has the effect of doing is it inhibits the ability of consumers, right, to afford formal rental accommodation as well as be able to service mortgages, the mortgage repayments. It as a result, subdues home loan demand. And this is an area that we obviously are a national implementing agent, for the national department to facilitate access, to the housing subsidy that is made available. It used to be called FLISP, but now we've changed the name. The minister relaunched that program, and we have a name change. It's now called the First Home Finance Subsidy. And that subsidy really is, as the name suggests, it's meant to facilitate first-time home ownership, and it is targeted at people that earn between 3,501 Rand per month all the way to 22,000 Rand. So it really covers that gap as well as the affordable housing market. So, yes, we are at the moment wanting to extend the impact that First Home Finance is going to have generally for the beneficiaries. However, this is what is happening in the environment. It's a high interest rate environment, which therefore means although we have targets that we have set for ourselves for first home finance, those targets, because of what is happening in the environment, might be impeded. However, the thing that is going to really help the performance of First Home Finance, access to that product, is the fact that now we have implementation guidelines for the non-mortgage products that have been approved, and we believe that this is really going to accelerate the impact that the First Home Finance Subsidy is going to have on the ground.
Consumers are also heavily indebted out there, so the credit health of consumers is a big issue. And in fact, one of the things that we've done as the NHFC is we've identified partners that we are going to partner with, because we believe that it's important to get beneficiaries, whether it's beneficiaries of the First Home Finance Program or beneficiaries generally, of the housing stock that we facilitate development of. We need to definitely rehabilitate them to get them to a point where they either are able to qualify for mortgages, in other words, they get out of being blacklisted, or just generally their affordability levels get improved so that they are able to benefit from the programs that are, earmarked for them out there. Our economic growth as South Africa, currently, again, we are not doing well. We are actually in a recession at the moment as a country. We've performed below our potential, and load shedding obviously has a big bearing on that, as well as the infrastructure challenges that we've got as a country. My colleagues have mentioned the issues around the fact that, some of the projects, particularly the social housing projects, IRDP projects, as well as contractor financing projects, they dependent on land being made available by municipalities, serviced land, that is. And so, the capacity constraints that are currently experienced in the municipalities, basically impede, because as an entity we try to facilitate, the participation of private developers, right, en masse. And the fact that there are these blockages at a municipal level, that really stands in the way of progress, and it's something that needs to really be addressed. That second point is related to what I've just said. The other reality is that construction costs have actually been going up year on year, and currently, as at the third quarter of 2022, the building confidence index, as is developed by the Bureau of Economic Research, suggests that building costs are sitting at 11% year on year, and this poses an issue. And I think as a sector, it's a good thing that we are actually now considering alternative building technologies that are supposed to, obviously there's many of them that are available. Some are more expensive than the conventional bricks and mortar model of building. However, there are some that are actually designed to bring down both the cost of delivery as well as the time in which projects can be delivered. So I think just to highlight some successes that we've had as an entity, and the NHFC was established in 1996, so this is our 27th year in existence, and what we've managed to achieve in that time period is that really the cumulative funds that we've managed to disperse, and these numbers are to the end of March 2022, sits in the region of 10.8 billion. That's how much we've actually, dispersed to the, to our clients who are the intermediaries that we rely on to basically build the gap and affordable housing stock. And what that 10.7 billion has managed to do is we've managed to leverage private sector participation to the tune of 28 billion rand over that time period. And then what we've also managed to do with respect to the housing opportunities that we have delivered through our lending activities is we've delivered 775,000 housing opportunities in the market. And then we also have a program management unit within the NHFC that really does work for metros as well as municipalities that require it. Those stats that are sitting at the bottom there, where we've managed to support 123 black SME contractors through work packages at, valued at 90 million rand, where 42 women-owned businesses benefited, as well as 15 youth-owned businesses benefited. It was a three-year program that we were appointed by the City of Cape Town on to effectively conduct repair work on their rental stock. So this is a program that we deem to have been highly successful, and the number of jobs that have been delivered over that time period sits at 8,000, and we are wanting to actually, take this as a showcase for other, metros to look at us as a service provider to be able to provide the service to them. And then from a first home finance point of view, and these numbers are from 2019, so shortly after the merger of the three DFIs in the human settlements sector to date to the end of March, in essence. So the value of approvals that we've managed to do, again, for beneficiaries of first home finance is to the tune of 631 million, and private sector monies that we have leveraged sit at 5.3 billion. And, Chair, you interrupted me. And the number of beneficiaries that we impacted with this first home finance program sits at 9,063. And this is just to briefly highlight the type of, units we facilitate delivery of. And it's just to highlight the fact that, black women have been, quite supported by the NHFC. There's a project in Kempton Park, for example, delivering 222 rental units where it's 100% black female owned. There's an SHI that's 100% black managed. Once again, that's going to deliver 60 units. Black youth-owned entities have been supported. And, yeah, I think if I then would move on to the HSDB. So the HSDB... Okay.
2 minutes.
So we are going to, like I said earlier, morph into the Human Settlements Development Bank. I think the work of actually getting us there is underway. We have already contracted GTEC to be able to set up a PMO for the NHSC that is going to dedicate all of its time to the establishment of the HSDB. And in terms of the terms of reference, some of the work that they're going to do also aims to support the department. So really it's going to be a joint collaborative effort between ourselves and the department to get us to a point whereby we get this bank established. Its main aim is really to extend the scope of what the NHFC is currently doing by, we want to play a very catalytic role with respect to growing the number of, entrepreneurs that are in designated groups that are black-owned, but we also don't want to confine our activity just to funding developers. We also want to get involved in the value chain. We want to be able to make sure that, because currently, particularly for the lower LSMs, or rather, let's just say our target market currently is the NHFC, what you are finding with respect to the pricing of mortgages is that their mortgages are actually priced above prime, whereas the housing market is supposed to be a subprime market. The people that are in the higher LSMs will tell you that they have never received a quote from a bank, for a home loan that is priced above prime. So one of the roles that we are wanting to play is to ensure that we facilitate affordability of mortgages for our target market. How are we going to do that? That's detail that we're going to thresh out between ourselves and National Treasury, as well as our shareholder, of course. Okay, just with respect to, I just want to quickly now highlight what we've done relative to the MTSF care, and I'm not going to go into much detail.
2 minutes, Upeli.
Oh, dear.
Just summarize. You don't summarize.
Okay, we aim to to almost meet the targets that were set up for us for the MTSF and the detailed
presentation. I haven't even presented the ATP. Okay.
No, unfortunately, I had to be fair as a chair. If 30 minutes. Now watch. 30 minutes. No, let's take it the members have read because I don't want to become unfair. Stephen would say, Utanda Umangelo, that's why we've given you more time. let's take it that it has been read. I don't want to be unfair to yourself, but actually we have met with you. You have come to present to us. I think we understand what you're doing at some, and we appreciate the good work. Unfortunately, time will never be there for us. Maybe we'll continuously have, as we engage in quarterly, we'll then invite you to come back again, identify one item, you come and speak to it, so that I can see the passion, and I don't want to demoralize that passion. Okay, but I'm afraid that I don't want to be unfair to other entities too. Can I allow members to interact with your presentation? Starting with the Honorable Makaseni, Honorable Tafeni, Honorable Mpiti, Honorable Doctor, and then Honorable Malimata, the last one will be an Honorable Snin.
The last presentation, and indeed, in ideal world, if all these things that they present, they can assist a lot of us because really our people are struggling to get finances in the bank. So I'll request really next time they must come and make proper presentation so that we come with a clear plan how to assist our people. And the spirit is on us to the land. So you must not be demoralized. Then on the PPRA, I think CFO, acting CEO, raised the issue of enforcing the consequence management and the staff, they are not happy. I just want to check how serious is it, because if they are not happy, they might take the entity back, maybe the issue of the strike, the threat on the issue of the people who are not happy when the consequence management is being implemented, because that's the challenge that we are facing of people do wrong things, they don't want to account. So also, if they think it will take the entity on the right direction, let them continue and just enforce and do the right thing. Also now yourself, you must not be a monster to them. Go a little bit with them. You know, in the South Africa, people have labor laws. They need to be consultant when you come with the new plans. At least you must get the bias of the workers, because workers are the strategic sectors that we need to be consulted when you do things. Yeah, I think I'm done. You can only like that, I feel it.
Under program for Usrane, the entity challenge to achieve the target of delivering 30,000 social housing units at current prices. So which action are taken to ensure that the target is achieved? And will additional funds be appropriated to this target? The last is, what is the status of the social housing growth plan? I thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mpiti.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just a few questions. I'll start with Shra. Some clarity on the 6,646 job opportunities, and just to understand who's targeted around that, because I do think it's fundamentally important that we do target young people in particular, for these particular opportunities to grow the skills base. Secondly, are there any MOUs that have been signed recently? What are those targets, and who have they been signed with? in regards to Program 4, we've noted, or I've noted, that there is a preemptive or deemed challenge in delivering 30,000 social housing units. What measures and interventions are being put in place to deal with that particular challenge and to achieve the target? What is the update on the social housing growth plan? And then on the PPRA, I know that there's been a lot that has happened in the past couple of months here, but just one question there is to say that, are there any current disciplinary cases that are currently before it? And then lastly, the NHFC, just one question there around the First Home Finance, formerly known as FLISP. You know, I think it's really a great initiative, and so when I was reading the document, I was focused particularly on the section that spoke to the inclusion of rural people who may want to have access to this particular housing opportunities. And there's a reference in the document that speaks to non-mortgage products. And so I just want to understand how exactly that would work in that particular avenue, in that particular rural environment, because it has to be inclusive, and obviously not everybody has the opportunity to earn between that bracket of 3,000 and 15,000 that was mentioned. So how does that look like? Because I think from the document, it's under development, and so how would that, you know, sort of manifest on the ground? Thank you very much, Shem.
Doctor?
Thanks, Chair, and thank you to the colleagues for all the presentations. They're all welcome. Chair, can I start off by please requesting that Honorable Sishwai mentioned two cases of people who were allocated inappropriate houses. If I could just maybe ask a request, because I think all of us as members know people who have approached us with those sort of issues, and we haven't had any joy in sorting it out. So if I can humbly ask the DM if I can perhaps also share some of those cases that you can perhaps drive. I saw the passion in which you have towards people, vulnerable citizens or groups in our society. With Shra, Chair, I wanted to maybe just also again follow with the same request that I've had earlier with other entities that are also doing programs that are meant to enrich and empower young people. I see you've got internship programs. If you could maybe just share that information so we as well as public reps are aware of those opportunities, beyond just knowing that they exist, but also getting, like, you know, this is when it opens, this is who can apply, this is how you apply, so that we can assist you to get word out, and we can make sure that these opportunities are available to a much wider audience than perhaps only the people that you may, as an entity, get in touch with. And then the NHFC, just obviously admire the passion, which is great. I wanted to maybe find out, I like the thinking that the entity has in terms of the approach going forward, reinventing how things are ordinarily done in wanting to achieve what you need to achieve. But I I feel like I want to be a bit cautious, or just maybe find out to what extent the increased target in the number of houses that you envisage or you would like to deliver. I mean, it makes sense considering the backlog and all of it. But I'm wondering, as an entity, are you empowered enough with the, you know, increased, the matching increased resources that are required for you to be able to do that? Otherwise, I have no problem with that target. I mean, if we can achieve it, it's great for our country, for the people, millions that have been waiting for a very long time for some you know, for the right to shelter to be provided. So I'm just wondering, in terms of you know, resource capacitation, is it matching what you envisage and what you desire to achieve? And then I don't think I have anything, Chair, for PPRA, except maybe just to make a comment around, you know, you mentioned some of the priorities that you've added and that you're working towards, and that, you know, I think considering that you're a regulatory authority, I would be happier if I saw that 5% for people or persons living with disability. I always get it wrong, and I'm always so conscious, but I hope I got it right this time. That I understand that you're achieving that program, you're doing well at it, but I would like to see an increase in that target, especially considering the work and the mandate that the entity is actually meant to do, because we see these vulnerable sections of our society is not necessarily being afforded, you know, quality in terms of the services and quantity in terms of those groups receiving the houses or services. So I'll end there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Honorable Malemasa.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also follow suit to say one welcomes the presentation. They are all good. Now, let's start with RA. It's just this technical one, especially if one has to be clarified on the time narrow margin between the time of construction and the renting. Bear in mind that people are waiting for houses, and once certain projects start there, it creates a number of things, including anxiety. People will be wanting to come in a form of work, in a form of renting, and all these other issues that we have to deal with. The second question, still on you, based on your PESEL, the legal factor is you from your own report who identified delinquent tenants. Now, what can be the cause? Should the cause be economic factor, where number of people are losing jobs due to the situation we are? How do you normally deal with that situation? Because it's not a volunteer one. It's not a question that I don't have an income to honor the contract. The other aspect will be, what measures do we have in place to deal with the social factor, the mob psycho of the rental boycott? What is it that we have in place to deal with that? Because if we don't deal it once it starts, then it grows bigger, we might not be able to deal it throughout the country. Then it becomes Christmas for all, which we don't want to go that route. I think indeed you have got Amadozi. I don't have much except to say where you filled all the key vacancies. I think that is good. We can't be having a situation where people, they don't have work, then they've got vacancies which are not filled. This applies to everyone who is here, and you haven't filled the vacancies. You come and report to us and say, I saw to never tomorrow again. It's the undermining of your own mandate completely if you are doing that. Before I leave, Comrade Chair, there is this issue, man, the CRU in Lerato Park in Kimberley, where that is finished, but there's no, management to run it. And you are running a risk of people who will go there, hijack it, and when go there, it would be difficult to take them out. I'm just giving that example because I was in Kimberley, I've seen that. NHFC. This one, man, let's zoom to it. People want houses, especially in Astana, Pagat. People want houses. Others, they want houses, but the barrier is that they are working now. Before they worked, they owed just Woolworth. As an example, a mere Woolworth. They blacklisted them. How flaky is your requirement when dealing with such people? Because I hear the issue of trying to do the debt canceling. But here's a barrier that this Woolworth has blacklisted them. But if you zoom into their pay slip and everything, you can be able to get your money and leave the matter of Woolworth with that person, not necessarily blackmail that person on the basis of Woolworth. How flaky is your requirements to meet that so that we assist people not to be penalized for other things which are not necessarily good for them to get houses. Thank you so much, Commissioner.
Next slide. You have something to raise? If you don't have, you can.
Okay, that's two areas, Chair. On the issue of Shra, you see, Chair, when you see social housing associations, in some of them, there's no life. You could see the houses there, and there is no life. I want to check perhaps an approach which was talking about having them with economic development programs, projects around them, utilizing the space that is within them, so that there is also an economic benefit. There could be those that would like to do some small projects within the land that is available next to them. I'm checking if that perhaps is considered or could not be considered within those particular spaces. The NHFC, okay, budget is identified for the program. I am not getting a view that within the partners to make the program to accelerate, there is an involvement of COSATU and union. I'm not getting that. I was trying to go through and check because I think one of Mr. would recall this program has been there with another name of people that are employed there to participate in the program. But you always hear teachers, nurses, domestic workers, they've got nowhere to go. They don't know where to benefit in the schemes of government. Here it is again. I want to check. If there's such program of mobilization and education and without unionizing it, but unions coming to know pamphlets, mobilizing those structures for the people to benefit, the need is huge outside there, but some of them they don't know. I'm just checking if there's such a process. Coming to PRA. Where we stay, Honorable Minister, there's an urban decay in the city suburbs. Huge high-rise buildings. We should not know who owns them, which are a threat within our communities. I know when you go to your home in Nelson Mandela, when you visit, you get scared to enter. Just around you, huge high-rise buildings. You don't know who owned them. Utilized by our African people with a...
The sunny side.
Yeah, sunny side. And also in the townships, they are influenced by their railway flats that no one wants to own, no one
won't take responsibility. They are a threat. Dirty things and threatening things are happening there. Now, I want to check how could this PRA be of help in such areas for us to be assisted. There's a transformation fund. I'm not getting clearly how that transformation, what is going to do, and how, where perhaps there could be guidelines that are going to be established so that everyone knows how to benefit in that transformation fund. Those are the few issues that I wanted to raise. Why this project is changing, or maybe that the fleet to be first home finance, perhaps just to know, because we're excited about fleet. All of a sudden, there's another name. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Society. Just from me, welcome the presentation. Sharan, there was a request from Department of Education that Sharan built in the areas that they are university, particularly the universities that never have the exposure, that you have those students who might not want to stay in the this residence, but don't want to, they'll prefer to have to rent a accommodation through SHRA. How far are we in terms of that? I know that this has been a debated matter between Minister Sisulu and Blade Nziman in one forum. But listening to the argument of the Portfolio Committee, of course, of higher education, it's a very important element. Because not all people want to stay in a school residence. They want home, because not only or children are going to school. You have fathers and mothers who would want to go back to school, and would want to have an accommodation that can accommodate the families in those areas. And one of the universities that they've raised was Venda in particular, that don't even have a student accommodation nor SHRA rental housing. How do we mitigate such situation to make sure that in universities we accommodate those that doesn't want to utilize student accommodation? Visited some of your projects. Some they don't have stove. Some they have stove. And this is one entity that is building the. I'm giving an example with stove. In Gauteng, in one province, you have different rental houses. And just to check, even with the, you know, sometimes people believe in the rental with the intention to buy. Do you have that option? Sure. CTRA, you know, Minister, when we passed this legislation, I was happy just to say that, you know, this property sector is white dominant ownership. Your real estate manage white. And when you talk about transformation, I expected to say, what is it that has been done to change that space? I know that we've denied you an opportunity to present the entire APP, but one would want to know, how then do you neutralize to transform the the ownership patterns to accommodate those that were previously disadvantaged? And dealing with the real issues that affect black people. You know, when you buy a house, you pay a lot of money before you can go into that house. And I've been protesting to get that money when I was told that I must pay this lawyer so much money. And it's not part of, you know, of the house. Lend the lay, why should I pay this so much money to buy a house? And these are the real questions that ordinary citizens have, to say, what these things, if we have to transform, if we need to transform, do we have to comply with the system, or we use the capacity of state to change the manner in which the property relations are managed in the country? Because that's my worry. Whether are we able to reach that level as a department? Because if you look at the buying power that the state has, you have that capacity working together with NHFC and other entities. You can change the property relations. What is it that has to be done to deal with that situation? You know, my daughter has employed with the one company in Joburg. We want to relocate. We listen to you when you launch this, first home?
First and final.
She said, Mama, I want to apply. But I don't know, but we can just go through the app and apply. I was not part of that launch, but I know that you can apply. He went through the system. He get somebody who's dealing with that. That man come back and say, oh, no, Uber said you are not credit worthy. We won't give you, you won't qualify. I don't know who Uber. But only Uber. Uber doesn't qualify. He comes back to me and say, Mama, but Uber? Uber won't get out too. Yes, no, I'm just saying, Anita, I want to understand this thing. Where, if government is saying when you earn 22 million, you are getting 40,000. And then government will subsidize 40,000. And then Uber said, you have not worked for 5 years. You are not credit with. Auna skolot. So I will wait. Auna skolot, honorable my. But you are a new employee. How do we then capacity empower our people? And I was worried to say, then my question lead to, when are we finalize the bill for the finance, the bank finance, housing finance, bank finance? Because I suppose government finance will not actually do that to our people. They'll have to take cognizance that you'll have new employees in the system who doesn't have a credit worthy, and but they want to own a house. So when are we finalizing the bill? And maybe just this Uber man. I must know this Uber. And again on the intermediaries that you use, NF NHFC. You're saying that I like where you are saying you want to mobilize that the prime interest is not abnormal in the system. You know, when I buy a car, I'm told I can only the maximum is 10, it's 5 years. A million car, but the house, the same price. You cannot take. It depends on the. It's a matter that our people, they don't have education. They are even forced to. You have to have a loan of 20 years. But if it's a car, because the car loses the value, you know the. I'm raising the issue of the private, how the private sector deals with our people on daily basis. The car loses the value, that's why they would not allow you to owe it for 20 years. But with the house, because it doesn't lose the value, you have been trapped to that 20 years. And I don't think to those that doesn't have to money to buy cash, who would say, I want to buy for 5 years, whether the system allows that without impediment. So which raise this issue that I'm raising, that at what point are we going to use the muscles of the state buying power to transform the management? Because it's like we're just complying with the system. Which is my worry. And one acknowledged, Minister, that at some point, of course, your entities were not stable and you have to stabilize and have capital, human capital for you to run this transformation. Now that we have stabilized, let's look at those issues. How do we use state power to transform property relations without us becoming compliant to the system? Let's become innovative. I like the NHFC innovation with relate to these issues, and we'll invite you to come and educate us more around these issues and us to understand you better, including the pra that when you are saying you are transforming, who transform and own, so that we have that understanding. Minister, I thought you would let I've been speaking for some.
I'm so impressed.
The
I'm an applaud system.
No, a woman will never teach you a woman. When I but I'm trying to show that I can speak Xhosa by listening and interacting with them. But the other thing, Minister, as I close my comment, is based on as a sector, in terms of job creation, I don't see that target to say, as a sector, including this private sector, you know, one of the things that we raise, is raised by NDP is that you have unregulated private sector, which they do as they wish in the country. How do we regulate them and make sure, using the power, because they are using their own power muscles in terms of buying power. But if ourselves consolidate our buying power, we can be able to twist the change the situation ourselves. How do we do that and make sure that even themselves, they are able to comply? When we say we want, because if you look at the stubbornness of job creation, no one is saying this private sector is getting business from government, but you have the stubborn effectiveness of job creation, there is no growth. All the time you are told that, and unfortunately, because even ourselves, we are politicking as politicians, we talk about it. No one is saying these people, but they are using state resources. How do we make them to make sure that they create jobs for our people because they are using the state power, the state money to do business in the country? So I think that's something that we have to interrogate ourselves, bring innovation within the system, and see how we then utilize the power that we have, borrowing power, to be able to transform our sector and make sure that we balance the equation. You know, we'll never balance it with this Molanyana. I know that we're trying, but those are not the real issues. We have to speak to real issues in the system. Thank you very much. Minister, and you too.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me start with PPRA to respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first